Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Event Industry News Podcast. My name is James Dixon, wishing you all a very good morning, afternoon, or evening, whenever or wherever you're tuning into today's podcast from. This is my third episode back now, recording the podcast after my extended break. And I'm delighted to say that celebrating that hat trick of podcasts back for me is Mr. Dan Schofield. Dan is the co-founder of Play Fund Win. He's joining the podcast today to tell us a little bit about it. Dan, welcome along to the podcast.
Hi, James. Thanks for having me.
You're very welcome indeed, mate. Dan and I were having a little chat off air just before we hit record on today's podcast. And really interesting background that you've got, Dan, in the world of events. And I'm keen to maybe sort of set out some of your sort of timeline and your career over the last sort of decade or so, and put that in some context before we really get into talking about what Play Fund Win is and how it came about. So good to have you on the show. Tell us a little bit about your background in the industry.
Yeah, I wish it was a decade. I feel like it's about five of them at the moment. I'm a bit aged, but yeah, I'm one of those very lucky people who's been able to make a career out of being involved in events. And for me, it all really started when I was trying to choose what I wanted to do at university. I knew I wanted to go to uni, and I was chatting with my dad, and he said, look, if you can find something that you love, then you'll never lack the motivation to go to work. Mm. And I love going to music events. I love going to sports events. So I ended up going and doing event management in Leeds, and really got the bug for it. So I did a placement year working on Great Run, so Great North Run, Great Manchester Run, that kind of stuff. So getting a bit of exposure to mega events, huge events, tens of thousands of people pounding the streets. And I knew at that point that I wanted to go and do sort of the biggest and best. Jobbed around, worked for Salford City Council, where I actually met Adam, who I know you know from Event Industry News.
Yeah,
Went out to the Middle East for a couple of years, working in Qatar, in Doha. And having gone from Salford City Council, where literally every penny counts on a budget, to some multi-million pound or multi-million dollar shows out in the Middle East, was a bit of a contrast. But it gave me the opportunity to work with some of the best talent suppliers in the world. Guys I'm still working with today. I've just done a project looking at a tender in Qatar, working with John Adkins from World Class Events, who was one of the production managers we were working with back then. Came back from the Middle East and went straight into London 2012. So I was the advance manager for the Torch Relay, so looking after the Torch in the North region. So Scotland, Ireland, the northeast of England, which was brilliant. By far the best job I've ever had. It was going out and talking events and looking at events and planning events on a day-to-day basis, all focused in on that one point of delivery. And the games themselves were absolutely fantastic. Very, very proud of what we achieved on that. Finished there, went up and moved on to Tour de France. So the Grand Départ in 2014, I was head of event delivery for that. I'm a proud Yorkshire lad, so nice to be back in Yorkshire and doing that. And then took a complete change of direction. So I moved from the straight event side into football. So I went as head of operations at Man City. Really, really great time there. The club are fantastic. They're really positive and proactive. I'm a Sheffield United fan. We could probably learn a lot about how Man City do things, but they treat the fans right. If it's the right thing for the fan base, then they generally will do it, which made my job a lot easier because I was there to run match days and the concerts and the special event side of things. I had a carrot dangled in front of me. So after a couple of years at Man City, I moved across town to Man United, where I was head of venue operations, which was a few raised eyebrows about the move, but the nature of it is there's no competition off the pitch. It's different fan bases, and no one's going to jump from being a Man City fan to being a Man United fan, and vice versa. So for me, it was relatively straightforward.
Yeah.
Again, did some good stuff. The event side of it for me was always a bit of a misnomer in football. So a lot of people in football don't talk about match days as events. They're match days, and the mentality and the mindset of the football industry is a match day is match day. But if you think of it, a match day at Old Trafford is probably the biggest event happening in the country on that particular day. And I tried bringing a lot of my event experiences into the way that match days are run at both City and at United. And we expanded on the event portfolio at Man United. They'd not done concerts there for 10 years, so we brought in a couple of shows. We did Billy Joel and the Rolling Stones at Old Trafford, which were great shows, working with two really, really good promoters. And we do the Soccer Aid there, which I actually now work on as a bit of a side project. I look after the operations for Soccer Aid in a freelance capacity. And that's kind of brings me to where we were. I left Man United in the autumn 2018, I think it was. And then freelance, did consultancy work in stadiums and some event-related stuff. But really started to build on an idea that I'd had a number of years ago for Play From Win, which I'm sure we'll come on to and we'll go into in a lot more detail. But the sort of background in events and the knowledge of the events industry enabled me to mould the idea of how we were going to deliver what is now becoming Play From Win.
Yeah, and we'll get into Play Fund Win, but I was particularly curious to talk and expand on something that you mentioned there, particularly while we've got, you know, the luxury of having you on the podcast today, about match days being events. And I've, you know, the old adage of, you know, if it walks like a duck and quacks like a duck, it's a duck. And if you're putting 75,000 people into a venue, and then there's a start time of something that they're going to be watched and hopefully entertained by, and they've paid a ticket price to go in and see it, and there's food available and there's drinks available, it's ticking a lot of event boxes, isn't it, really?
It is, although entertainment, some of the football Man United were playing at the time probably doesn't class as entertainment. Doing a bit better this season, but it is. And you can take that through everything, anything in sport. From, we touched on it briefly before we hit record, but you do a seven-a-side, a five-a-side tournament, that's an event. It has all the defined points of an event. Like you say, it quacks. It's got people arriving, people participating, people leaving. Clear definition of what an event generally is. And you scale that all the way through the football or the sporting pyramid up to, like you say, the events at Old Trafford or the events at Wembley or Twickenham or Hampden. And we all have the same component parts, obviously slightly different guides with the green guide and the safety side of the stadium operation, but same principles apply. And I think one of the things I've done throughout my career today is take those same principles, regardless of the scale of the event or the size of it. You take the same principles that you apply to a heads of state dinner through to a stadium concert or a stadium match day.
Yeah, and I guess in some respects then that having that sort of really strong sports events background is to me something that leans itself to what Play Fund Win is, and is that very much how it was born as an idea? Tell us about how what Play Fund Win is and how it was born.
It is. So Play For Win, it's a really simple idea, and I'm a simple guy. It was a very straightforward idea that a lot of people fundraise and they don't necessarily have the tools to be able to do it. So in events, you have crowds attending. In normal times, we'd have crowds attending, and they're not often used as a tool for fundraising. There may be some incidental fundraising around it, but we don't often use the crowd themselves as a platform for fundraising. When I was at Man City, we got approached by an American company who wanted to come in and stage a match day lottery.
Yeah.
But they wanted to print the tickets off through the catering kiosk. So you go up to buy a pint or a pie and you buy a lottery ticket, and they split the funds 50-50, 50% going to City and the community, the club's charity, and 50% forming the prize pot.
Right.
Great concept, really, really simple concept, but great concept. But it struck me as ludicrous that they were still looking at a manual process of physically printing a ticket out. And it kind of planted the seed or an acorn of an idea around digitization of the raffle aspect of it.
Yeah.
It wasn't the right thing for us to do at Man City at the time, so we didn't actually progress with the idea at that point. But the idea was then planted. Zoom forward a couple of years, and one of my good friends, a lad called James Lester, was working for Manchester United Foundation. And James was telling me about the lottery that they do on match day at Old Trafford, but they only do it in the hospitality spaces, where they have a team of dozens of people walking around selling raffle tickets in hospitality. And they were making £15,000 a game from just selling it in the hospitality spaces there. the idea being planted of a digital raffle, but again, a manual process of doing it. So James and I went and had a beer, and we had a conversation, and he's now the ops director with me on Play From Win. So he obviously he liked the idea of what we were looking to do.
Yeah, I'm pleased to say there that where all good ideas are born, you went and had a beer.
So, yeah, of course.
Yeah, as you were, continue, please.
So we went away, we've developed a digital raffle platform based on the same premise. It's a 50-50 premise. Notionally, it can be changed and modelled depending on who the audience are. But we looked at having a digital platform that could be scaled across the events industry. But also another passion of mine is grassroots sport, and all grassroots clubs fundraise. So my nephew plays for his under-10s team in Rotherham, and he is constantly badgering me to do football cards or run a tuck shop and all the types of things which they do. And they don't necessarily have the right tools or the right means to be able to do it. And a lot of fundraising at that level is very much... brighten up.
Streaming sunlight. Yeah. We're not seeing that in a few days in York.
So a lot of fundraising at that level, it is manual and it is time consuming and it doesn't necessarily give them the yield or the return. So as we looked into it more, we realised that we could hit a bit of a USP with a unique licensing combination through the Gambling Commission, which allowed us to stage these digital raffles legally, but for anyone from a small society as a grassroots football club all the way through to a major concert promoter or a major event organizer, and we'd be able to provide that as a service. So the two end of the spectrum which we're looking at, grassroots sport, where it's very much localized draws, they might only have 100 people enter each draw, but somebody on the touchline of that pitch will walk away with £50 and the club will get £50. That's a lot of money to a grassroots club, and you multiply that across the year, that becomes a big opportunity. You multiply that into 102,000 affiliated football clubs in the UK, and there's a huge opportunity for Play From Win on that side of it. You add in hockey, rugby, cricket, netball, lacrosse, all the different sports, and there's a big market for us to go out there. You then jump across to the event side of it, and you say, okay, if a concert at an arena, so the AO Arena in Manchester, you've got 10,000 people attending a concert there. There's 10,000 people who generally will want one of two objectives. Everyone wants to do good for charity. Everyone wants to be able to support a good cause. But everyone would love the opportunity of winning a bit of money themselves. So if you stage a Play From Win draw at a concert like that, you raise thousands of pounds for charity, and someone in the audience walks away with thousands of pounds. So that's the premise on the event side of it. You're doing good, you're raising money for charity, and you have the opportunity to win some cash.
Who doesn't want that?
Yeah, exactly. And as I say, it's a really simple concept. You on the event side, if it's a ticketed concert, for example, as soon as the ticket's purchased, when you get your email receipt, there'd be a link for you to enter the Play From Win draw. You go on, you jump onto our platform, you can enter through the platform or by SMS. You enter, and depending on how the promoter set it up, a minimum of 50% of the proceeds will then go to the charity nominated by either the promoter, the event organiser, or the artist on stage. So I use Ollie Mears as an example, just because Ollie plays soccer, which I'm involved in. If Ollie was doing a Play For Win draws at his tour, which he's got scope, 25 dates due this summer, hopefully, fingers crossed, they happen. And if not, when they do happen, if he were to stage Play From Win draws at all those, and he's a big UNICEF supporter, so if he did those for UNICEF, across that tour, he'd make over £1 million for UNICEF if he did £10 tickets at the draw. And every single night, someone in the audience will walk away with £10,000-£15,000, which is not an insignificant amount of money to bring in.
It's not at all, and it's a very easy concept to understand. And thanks for explaining it so clearly. And what one thing that I've scribbled down here, which is particularly pertinent, is the question: cash after COVID. And you know, I've got to put things into context. I've got two boys, but one of them is 14 years old and has been playing Sunday League football since he was very young. And you know, I'm sure a lot of people listen to this who've got kids who play grassroots sport know that, you know, you always have to go with a couple of quid in your pocket for the lady who's coming around, you know, for the raffle, for the bottle of wine or something. And, you know, that those few pound coins go into the club's coffers and help the club keep ticking over and do what they need to do. And when grassroots sport picked up again after last summer, you know, when we were able to go back and kids could start training, and there was a brief period from mid-August through to October where they were playing matches again. And one thing that became really obvious very, very quickly was that nobody was carrying those pound coins in their pockets anymore and turn up with cash. You know, one thing that last year really did is push people towards cashless payments, really towards contactless, using their phones and things like that. So this is potentially a really sort of opportune moment, isn't it, for a digital platform to maybe not so much take advantage of the situation, but to tap in now to this sort of slight change in psyche of consumers and not using cash and maybe just using their phones.
Yeah, very, very much. I just scribbled down cash after COVID because it's a piece which we've talked about. And we've talked about, I don't want to sound mercenary, mm-hmm. but there's a very real need for what we're doing right now. And in the coming months, the opportunity for Play for Win will be realised. At the grassroots level, clubs rely on the revenues that they take on the touchline. They rely on the take from a bar if it's a sports club or the tuck shop that they run. They've not had those revenues for nigh on a year now, and their coffers will be running short, so they need to be able to push that back through. By providing a digital aspect, we don't rely on that face-to-face interaction. It can all be done remotely. And part of what the Play for Win service is, a club secretary for a grassroots club jump onto the platform. It's really a three-step process for them to set up a draw. They simply tell us when they want it to start, when they want it to finish, and how much they want the entry fee to be. Mm-hmm. We then fire up the draw, and we send them all the digital marketing materials they need. So they get a toolkit which is dressed and branded as if it's our club. So my nephew plays for Rotherham Town Juniors. Yeah. When Rotherham Town Juniors fire up a draw, it'll have their crest, it'll have their club colours, their club logos. They get a unique URL, so someone can just either click on that, or if they print off and put posters up around where they play, scan the QR code, and go straight to the draw and are able to enter. So we make it as simple as we can for people to participate and go through. Yeah. Move that across onto the event side of it. I mentioned about the email receipt from ticket purchase, but at events itself, whether it's a physical event or a virtual event, it's still the same process. It's a digital entry side of it. And part of the license which we hold is that these are remote. They're classed as lotteries. It's a raffle, but they're classed as lotteries. And it's all remote, so there's no physical printing of tickets. It all has to be done through our license platform.
Yeah, absolutely. And as anybody who's run, you know, a major, you know, raffle for a big event, you know, it's not uncommon, is it, to sell those tickets. You know, if you're running a big gala dinner, a fundraising dinner, for example, and you've got a load of really good raffle prizes on offer, and you're doing one of these sort of grand raffles for 10 quid a ticket, you know, it's all got to be licensed, you know. And I've yeah. worked with people before who've been putting on fundraising dinners and they've never done it before, and little things like that you don't realize. If you've never run a big an event of that nature before, you might not realize that there are licensing issues to do something as simple as running a raffle where you're going to sell tickets in advance. And having all that sort of pre-licensed element to it is just removing one extra or one less headache, isn't it, for event organizers who are working at that grassroots level.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, that applies throughout the pyramid of opportunity for us. So we're licensed to stage everything from small society draws, which are your draws up to £20,000 proceeds. But then we're also licensed to stage draws, which go up to £5 million proceeds, because wow. we want to be able to open up to everything. And in the event of a major festival wanting to work with us and stage a Play for Win draw around a major festival, if it's a 100,000 capacity festival and they're doing a £20 ticket entry, the numbers soon ramp up and do bring it into significant yeah. figures. Add in if it's a broadcastable festival, you taking the broadcast market as well, who all can be sat at home enjoying the coverage on their telly, get the phone out, and they can easily participate just by going through. And what we've done with the platform, we're making it APIable into other people's tools and apps and websites, sure, yeah. So yeah. They can host it within the festival's own website or for an arena group or a even an artist. If the artist wanted to host a draw directly within their website, they can do that through APIs into our platform.
And of course, going back to the sort of the major sports now, well, first thing I want to say is it's clearly a scalable idea, isn't it? And this is the beauty. Straight away, it can work at grassroots level for your Sunday League club. It can work for your sort of medium-sized event. And like you said, it's easily scalable straight up the way. Nothing changes, really, other than the amount of people who are actually participating. And just going on to the API sort of side of things, of course, when you get then to your major level events or big football clubs like the ones you've worked at, City and United, they've all got their own sort of apps. They've got things with that, you know, their supporters, their match day crowd will be going on a particular platform quite regularly to see the starting lineup, to find, you know, the match day programs are digitized now. They've all got their own apps. Being able to integrate this sort of thing into something that the fans are already going on or the event attendees are already going on is quite critical, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And we wanted to make it as accessible as possible. So by allowing it to be hosted and white labeled into third party apps and websites, that achieves that for us. And a lot of what we found through the research into fundraising, you don't want to break people's stride, as it were. So as using that example, everyone has their match day routine. They're not necessarily going to open up an app they've never used before, but if they see it directly hosted within their existing app, which they use as part of their, for having a pint before the game with their mates, they're talking about what's happening that day and what's going on with the game, and then they jump on and enter. So I've talked about the grassroots sports side of it, the professional game and the upper tiers of the football pyramid, and are another opportunity for us.
Yeah, absolutely. And I can't help but think about this thing that we touched on right at the beginning, and as we've alluded to off air before we hit record, which is this idea that sports events, match day fixtures are events, you know, grassroots sports, you know, summer tournaments. And again, many people listening to this can hopefully relate to it. But, you know, I've been to, you know, numerous summer football tournaments, 5-a-side, 6-a-side, 7-a-sides, you know. All the local grassroots clubs organise their own summer tournament. It's a great revenue generator. You know, it's a bit of focus on their particular club, but they are running events. They're ticking all of those boxes. And I think as an industry, sometimes we do maybe forget that we're even bigger than we even think we are sometimes as an industry. When you start to look at those sort of grassroots levels, and they are more than justified in being classed as events and maybe deserve a little bit more focus as such, I think.
Yeah, definitely. And as an industry, we are accountable for how people act and how people want to achieve that. And when you attend an event, whether you intend to or not, you generally will look around and you'll pick things up and you'll notice things which are happening, and you'll then apply those into the different scenarios which you allude to there. So anyone who is organising a junior tournament will almost learn the ropes from attending other people's tournaments or from attending other events which may have professional event organisers involved with them. One of the things we've been looking at with Playful Win is some of the bigger tournaments and some of the bigger networks within grassroots sports. And you look on things like Team Grassroots or Pitch Hero, which are two of the bigger yeah. ones within grassroots, and they don't actually allude to events. They allude to putting on games and they allude to putting on tournaments, but we don't necessarily talk from the context of events. I was doing a load of research around generally the event industry and numbers and metrics and bits and pieces, and the realisation that those numbers are probably just ones which are reported through event organisers. You take in the numbers for grassroots sport and for all the other aspects as well, which are events and participation, those numbers swell massively.
Yeah.
It's not something I'd necessarily put the two and two together, but it's a huge.
Absolutely. I don't think it's right that we shouldn't shy away from the fact that this has obviously been launched as a business idea for you guys. You know, no doubt it has benefits to the people who are going to use it. As we've said, the whole point is that 50% of the revenue generated is going to a nominated charity or to the grassroots club as much needed income for them, which is great. But there's obviously got to be some revenue for you guys as well. In terms of a business model, how does that work in terms of you sustaining yourself as a business? And, you know, is it a percentage based sort of deal? How does that side of things work?
Yeah, so there's a few different revenue streams which we've built into it. So the operating customer service fee which we charge gets netted off the entry fee. So if there's 100% of the entry fee, 50% of it is the prize. The balance of 50% of it goes to the good cause or charity. The balance of 50% has the operating cost, which is generally 7.5% netted off. And then our service fee of 7.5% is netted off, and the balance of 35% then forms the prize, which is given. So the operating and the service fees are all netted off from the initial entry fee. So that, again, with scale, becomes a very profitable business, hopefully. We hope as we move forward, and we don't shy away from that. I mean, we facilitate a service which will raise a hell of a lot of money for good causes.
Absolutely, yeah.
But you're absolutely right. It is a business in its own right. We also then will have advertising around the platform, partnerships with organisations who want direct access into the markets which we're working with, and we will have a lot of data. And we're still toying with the idea of how we handle, manage, and potentially commercialise the data which we receive as well from the entrance. So there's a number of different revenue streams in it. One of the things we want to achieve with Playfulwin is that we've realised a lot of people who do fundraise, so particularly more of the grassroots side of things, they're not able to use platforms like Just Giving or Virgin Money or some of the other platforms because they're not registered charity. So I think one of the things which will transition with Playfulwin is that we will become a bit of a mainstream digital fundraising platform aside from the raffle side of things. So people who fundraise but aren't charities will have a platform to be able to do so in a similar way to the do on Just Giving or Virgin Giving.
I've scribbled something else down here as you're sort of talking, and forgive me for making assumptions here and shoot me down if I'm wrong, but my gut reaction is that you're not somebody who sits and codes and programs and does all the sort of the tech side of stuff yourself. You know, when you've obviously had this idea, you know, a couple of years ago, and you said you sat down with your business partner and the other co-founder to look at it in more detail. But when it actually came to building the platform, how did you go about doing that? Did you have anybody in mind that you could go to, or was it pretty much, right, we've got this great idea, where do we start? You know, how did you actually approach getting it built?
Yeah, so there's three co-founders of the business. There's myself, whose idea it was originally then. There's a friend of mine, Steve, who I've known 20 odd years, and Steve he was at PRS for 9 years, massive network of people across the music industry. And Steve and I were socializing the idea and saying, look, we've got this opportunity, we've got this idea, we want to be able to do something with it. Who do we know? And yes. Steve was doing some work at the time with a company called Trusted Media. And Dean Lynn, who owns Trusted Media, came on board as a third co-founder with us. And through that relationship, Dean's skin in the game is that he's built the platform for us. So with that, we've been very fortunate that we've actually got in-house resource to be able to do it all, design it all, build it all, and take it to the point where we currently are. The final piece of the jigsaw is on the gambling commission side of it. So anyone who produces software which is used for gambling has to have a gambling software license through the gambling commission. Yep. So we've partnered with a third party company just to add that final element of a licensed random number generator into the platform that Trusted and built.
Right. Okay. So I mean, there's a lot of stuff going on in the background that people, maybe initially when they get the simplicity of the idea and how easy it is to use, maybe don't realize that all of this stuff has had to go on in the background as well to get it to the stage that it's at now. How big a learning curve was it for you guys personally? You know, were you aware that there would be all this stuff that you had to get licensed and sorted beforehand, or, you know, was it a process where you were constantly maybe every month or every week realizing, oh crap, there's another hurdle that we've got to jump?
Yeah, there's been a lot of the oh crap moments. as you go through the gambling side of it, doesn't sit that comfortably with me, if I'm perfectly honest. I didn't want to create a gambling product,
yeah, but
it's a means to an end to be able to achieve what we want to achieve. And the nature of it being a highly regulated industry means that we have to get on board with that. We have to do that. So all sorts of things around anti-money laundering laws and protective people laws and the various different policies and processes which we need to have built into place has been a learning curve. We've been quite fortunate that our legal advisors are specialists on that side of it. So Joelson, who we've been working with, have been able to guide us and sort of lead us through that process. But every call with them, it's like, oh, mind blown. There's new things coming on board. And it's one of the things which we've said for this investment round, which we're coming into now. We're doing a combination of the Cedars campaign, but we are also taking private equity. And what I'm really keen to do is to bring in smart money. We don't just want money for people to sit as silent investors. We want money and expertise and network. And a couple of the people we're speaking to have scaled businesses within the gambling world before, and that sort of expertise is hugely valuable. The compliance side of it is a big piece for us. So we want to bring somebody on board who's done a compliance role within a licensed gambling business.
If you don't mind me asking, obviously we've talked about this being scalable, but when we go back to looking at the grassroots element of it, you know, and the sports side of things, obviously kids now have mobile phones, you know, in terms of protecting children against using this, I presume it's licensed for, is it 18 and over, you know, if it's licensed through the Gambling Commission. So what sort of work have you had to do as a business potentially to make sure that you are complying and showing that you're taking effective measures against, you know, young people potentially using the platform?
Yeah, so there's a number of different pieces which we brought in. So there's an age verification check. So we don't pay out any money without an age verification check. So there's two sides to that. It's not feasible for us to do an age verification check on every single entry that comes in. So we do a dip test on that. So we do one in 100 entries. We'll do an age verification check. To register for the platform, people have to put in their age, and they can't add an age which is below that day's 18 years going through. But then we roll in an age verification check before anything gets paid out. So that side of it is massively important. I mentioned how the gambling side doesn't necessarily sit that comfortable with me. We want to avoid making this product look appealing to people who want to gamble. This is purely on the fundraising side, and it's on the very small scale, localized, absolutely, lower risk element of things.
I don't want to sort of sound like that's a question, you know, to sort of say, you know, what are you doing, and this is a problem. You know, I think everyone, certainly myself, gets that this is a fundraising tool. This is not a gambling tool, but I guess a necessary evil is that it's got to sit within certain regulatory sort of commissions from a licensing point of view. And one of those is that it's to do with gambling, quite rightly. But I think it's obviously important that we don't stray from the fact that this is a fundraising tool, isn't it?
No, and I think a lot of my time has been spent bringing us in line with the policies and procedures which we need to achieve the licenses which we put in place. And I'm adamant that if we're doing this, we're doing it right. I don't want to cut corners, and I don't want to jump on some of the opportunities which would have perhaps made it a bit easier for us. I want to go down the fully regulated route and have the Gambling Commission license in place. And I'm sure people will come across the prize draw competitions where you buy a raffle ticket and you can win a car or you can do things. And that, to me, it's overly glamorizing what can be achieved. And it's a loophole within the Gambling Act, which is about to be closed. So a lot of the organisations that are running that side of things are not necessarily going to have the longevity of what we will have to play for win, because we're doing it through the right channels. We're going through the Gambling Commission, getting those licences. We're also getting memberships and are following a true fundraising path. So the Chartered Institute of Fundraisers and the fundraising regulator, we're taking memberships there. And it's all rubber stamps and making sure that we're doing it right. We're partway through the process for applying for ISO 27001 for our information security side of things. And hopefully, and I want this to come across, and it's important to me, we are taking the measures that we need to do now to future-proof the business. So particularly because we're visiting at some stage, any investors coming on, I don't want them to look at us and think we're just a fly-by-night type of, and that's a bad phrase of word because of the business industry, we're not, this isn't just something we come up with on a whim and thought, oh, it was an easy opportunity here. This is something which we've put a lot of work into, a lot of background, a lot of research to make sure we are doing it right.
Yeah, and I have to say, you know, in terms of, you know, meeting you and doing this podcast today, and I know that we spoke again off air about our paths have probably crossed at various events in the past. You know, this is clearly something that's been born out of direct experience. You know, I don't think anybody could doubt, you know, working for Tour de France, you know, Great North Run, Manchester Run, Manchester United, Manchester, those sort of football clubs, and working for those sort of levels of sports events means that this idea has been born out of, you know, genuine credibility. And I think that sometimes, you know, there's been ideas that have come out from people who maybe don't have direct experience in terms of what their idea is then going to focus on. And I would say that to your credit, it certainly comes across that this idea has been born out of the experiences you've had working in events and working in events that are aligned with sport particularly, and coming up with something that can genuinely be pushed out and potentially used not just by sports events but all sorts of events for good purposes. And I hope, to your credit, as I said, I think that comes across.
Thank you. And I think that experience piece is what's enabled us to position it as we have and look at see the opportunities. When we originally started this, we were looking at it purely from a professional football aspect. Mm-hmm. And then it was that eureka moment of my nephew waving a football card in front of my favorite. I actually got one here. So one of these, you pick a square, you scratch it off, and whoever wins it, although that one's got coffee stains on it because it's my poster. And that, actually, we could take this model digitized, we could scale it into grassroots. And then because of the nature of my background and the work that I've done previously, the event side of it just opened up as an opportunity. And the conversations which I've been having with promoters, with organizers, are generally positive. And there's been a bit of unknown. And I mentioned the word mercenary earlier, and I don't in any way want to come across mercenary, but because of the unknowns in the industry at the moment, we expect and we hope that everything comes back to the levels which they were pre-pandemic. But are people going to have as much disposable income? Are people going to be at ease attending events? And that's kind of where the digital aspect of it will come into its own, through all the streaming events which are going on, through the opportunities which that will open up for us.
Absolutely, and be interesting to see, you know, further down the line, you know, how the platform behaves when you can combine a television audience, a remote audience potentially, and a live audience that are in the stadium, you know, certainly in the sporting event context, but also if you look, you know, beyond that and into live music events, you know, when we get back to having, you know, a proper summer season of festivals, you know, a lot of the major festivals are broadcast on TV as well. Most of the festivals, I don't know a single music festival, in fact, that doesn't have an affiliation or supports a particular charity or a number of different charities. So there's potential for them to utilize the audience that are there at the time, but also a television audience, even if they're watching highlights. It doesn't have to be live in real time, does it?
And that's the beauty of it for me on the event side of it. The industry has been so giving for so long and supporting charities in a number of different ways. This actually gives a very proactive and a very real opportunity to utilise the crowd and give them the choice of being able to do additional fundraising aspects and have that, not selfish, but also have that get something in return for it with the opportunity to win. And the beauty of the way that we've licensed it is that we're not restricted to working with charities who are licensed themselves, because we carry all the licenses. So whether it's a small hospice who don't have the internal resource to be able to have the licenses in place, or fundraising officers which do it, that doesn't matter. We can support them. They can become a benefactor of a draw if that's who the artist chooses, or the promoter chooses, or the event organizer chooses.
we've been talking on the podcast today to Mr. Dan Schofield, the co-founder of Play Fund Win, about this this new platform that the guys have developed to improve the way that the fundraising is done at events. We've spoken a lot about sports and grassroots events, but I think one of the biggest things to come out of this chat today is the ability of this particular service to be scalable and work across any type of event, regardless of what you may be calling it. It could be a gala dinner, it could be a festival, it could be a concert in an arena venue, it could be a grassroots sports tournament of some description, and that strikes me as the beauty of this particular endeavor. Dan, if people do want to find out a little bit more about it, how do they track you guys down?
Yeah, so website is just playfundwin.com, or same on all social media, so Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, it's just at playfundwin. And yeah, it's exciting time for we're ramping up to be able to properly launch it in April time, so people will hopefully start hearing about draws from April onwards, and hopefully an event that they get to all attend in person would be nice.
Yeah, and best of luck with it, you know, going live and hopefully getting it out there in April time hopefully coincides with you know, the world as we know it, opening up from how we've become used to it over the last 10 months or so. So exciting times for everybody at the moment, and particularly exciting times for you guys as things hopefully open up and become a little bit clearer in the next few months. And I would just point out as well to keep your eyes on eventindustrynews.com for some more information about this. As Dan said, he's going to be speaking to Adam Parry, the editor at Event Industry News, about this particular project. So no doubt you'll see some information on the website in the coming weeks and months as well. Dan, thanks for taking the time to have a chat to us today. I'm going to pick your brains a little bit off air as well about some other stuff that we might be able to speak to you on the podcast about, because there's a lot of stuff that I've jotted down here today, and it'd be great to get you back on another episode if you're up for it, and maybe chat about some of your other experiences and go into your sort of event operations experience with some of these sports clubs that you've spoken about, if you're up for it. Be great to get you back on the show, and I'm sure there's a lot of people listening in today who are shouting down their iPhones or whatever they listen to the podcast on, saying, ask him about this, ask him about that. So if you've got any questions for Dan and anything related to sort of the world of sports events, don't forget to get in touch with us on social media, particularly through Twitter at Event News Blog, and use the hashtag EIN Podcast if you want to comment about today's podcast, or if you've got any subject matter and questions that you would like to see addressed on any future editions of it. That brings us pretty much to the end of today's episode. Our thanks once again to Mr. Dan Schofield from Play Fund Win. Best of luck to you guys. You can listen to all of the other episodes of the podcast via eventindustrynews.com or via your favorite podcast platform. And for now, well, it's a very goodbye. As I said, that was my hat trick appearance since returning to the podcast, and I look forward to seeing you on the next episode. My name's James Dixon. Goodbye.